If you're looking for the perfect gift, you're covered with a gift that's sure to wow. Taste of Chicago ships Lou Malnati's legendary deep dish pizzas nationwide. Plus, they ship other Windy City favorites too. Visit tasteofchicago.com to order today.
It's 11:38. Carrie Peck, do you have anything wise to say about that observation here? Welcome to the show, my friend.
Well, good morning, John. Happy holidays to you and your listeners. Hope everybody's enjoying the holiday season.
Yeah. Carrie Peck, the elder law attorney, whose advice you hear frequently here on WGN Radio, is on a line. I have questions just about elder care and scams and issues that families deal with relative to the oldest generation. But I'm also interested in, you often mention revocable trusts or living trusts and irrevocable trusts. And anybody who's watched that TV show Succession knows how important the line of succession is for a media empire. Well, we're watching it play out in real life with the Murdoch family. What's the story there, Carrie, and what should we know about that?
Well, it appears that Rupert Murdoch has chosen one of his children, Lachlan, I believe, to be his heir in the management of his business. Rupert's expressed the opinion that he wants Lachlan to take over because he believes Lachlan will follow his father's bent and towards conservative reporting, conservative media.
On Fox News, yeah.
On Fox, yeah, Fox News, Wall Street Journal, and the entire Murdoch empire. The issue appears to be Rupert's ability or lack of ability, and I don't mean mentally, I mean legally, to change the trust, taking away voting rights from all his other children and giving them exclusively to Lachlan. And so far in Nevada, they have a system where a commissioner, instead of a court, made a decision in a lengthy written opinion that Rupert did not have the ability legally to change his irrevocable trust, and irrevocable means what it says, particularly in this instance. The commissioner says you can't change it. Revocable, of course, John, means that you can change it, you can amend it. And so Rupert lost round one. And he's apparently going to take the next step, which in Nevada is to a court, to seek authority to change his trust, his irrevocable trust.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. I guess you can appeal anything, so he can appeal this. It's weird, though, that I could see if he were deceased that there would be, you know, no conversation to be had. But as he is still alive and with his mental faculties, you would think that the court would say, well, you've changed your mind. It's your empire. So therefore, you get to do whatever you want. I guess technically it's not his empire anymore. Once you do an irrevocable trust, if it is what it sounds like it is, it's no longer your empire, even as you're still alive and running it, huh?
Well, I think that your assessment on that is correct, and I also think that in this instance, you know, the family decided that they wanted all of the children treated equally. And when he made that decision, you know, everybody was to be treated equally. Now he's changing his decision, and you're right. When you put a document and deem it to be irrevocable, that's precisely what it says and precisely what it is. You can't change it. So when you're, you know, any of your listeners going to use an irrevocable trust, often used in estate planning for life insurance policies, but 99% of the trusts out there are revocable for this being a great example. Why? You know, circumstances change. People change their minds. They may not like something a child did. They may not like who that child married, et cetera, et cetera. Revocable trusts allow you to change it.
I wonder if this will carry any weight. The argument on the other side is, yes, but this will hurt shareholder values. This is not in the best interest of the company. If there's any kind of fiduciary responsibility, this will hurt Fox News. If they become CNN or try and become News Nation, there's already a CNN. There's already a News Nation. What's the point of Fox News if it's not Fox News? This will be bad for the company, and everybody will suffer. And I could see that very much happening, Kerry.
Well, I think it's certainly a viable standpoint, and I think it's certainly a scenario that the court will take into consideration, and the Rupert Murdoch and his lawyers will make that argument to the court on the appeal level of this decision that they're not happy with. I certainly understand that economic decision, but I don't know that at the end of the day that means you cut the feet out from under the other three children.
Well, yeah, I guess they have an interest too. What's a trust for me though? You talk about living trust. Is that the word or phrase you use, living trust? What does a trust mean to most of us, Kerry?
Well, for most of us in Illinois, we use a revocable living trust for several reasons. One is to avoid probate. And we're talking about a post-death probate proceeding. In Illinois, if you die with assets in your name alone, not in joint tenancy, joint tenancy is A and B, A dies and the property goes to B upon death. But if I die with assets in excess of $100,000 in my name alone, that asset needs to be probated. Those assets need to be probated. Probate is a court proceeding opened in the county in which your listener resides in, Cook County, Lake County, DuPage County. And the law requires that we have an administrator, if there's no will appointed, an executor, if named under a will appointed, and we probate that estate. And in large measure, that probate is for the benefit of creditors, because in Illinois, creditors have 6 months to file claims against the estate. Those could be medical bills, credit card bills, things like that. And that estate's going to be open no less than probably 9 months, because most estates don't close right after the 6 month statute of limitations for creditors to file their claims. And it's a process that can be avoided with the use of a revocable living trust. Why? When we create a revocable living trust, we retitle the assets into the trust. So the John Williams Revocable Living Trust holds John Williams' assets. And that's the way we avoid probate, and it's also an easier method of passing assets without court supervision, without the
right
delay, and so forth.
But that doesn't eliminate the claim that the creditors would have on the estate, right?
It does not, but there may be no assets to file against. The creditors typically file in probate. They typically do not file against a revocable living trust. They would have to open a court proceeding to file against the trust.
So mom and dad die and they leave us $100,000 or $1,000. Say they leave us $1,000, but they have credit card bills to pay. Those credit card bills come out of the estate. Before the kids would get the money, the creditors would get the money. Is that right?
Well, typically that is correct. But don't forget, if mom and dad leave you $1,000, you're not going to have to open a probate estate. The creditors will not have a forum to file a claim. They won't have a court proceeding to file a claim. And again, they're not likely to file to open a court proceeding to file a claim against an estate less than $1,000 or less than $100,000.
Well, wait a minute. Say mom and dad have $72,000 in debt, and they've only left me $1,000.
Right.
What happens to the $70,000 of debt?
It's likely going to go unpaid, because nobody's going to open a court proceeding.
They're not going to come after me, the kid. They're not going to come after me. And you said they're not going to come after the $1,000 that was left for me in this hypothetical?
No.
It's not worth their time. And is there a threshold? Is it $100,000, Kerry, that the creditors do or don't come looking? Or what was that all about?
Well, $100,000 is the threshold to open a probate, and that probate then gives the creditors a place to file a claim. And the claim says John Williams owes American Express $250, and here's the claim form that we filed in the probate court. And if we're probating the estate, generally that claim will be paid from the estate money. So
does that expire after a certain point? Does that expire after a certain point in time? Like, maybe I won't tell them that that mom and dad have passed. How do they know? And how long do creditors have to claim the assets of the estate?
Well, it's a great question. Creditors must get published notice. So when we open a probate estate, the law requires we publish four claims. And so that publication typically occurs in what's called the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin. Creditors have people that sit around all day long reading, did John die? Did Carrie die? Should we file a claim?
By the way, we're talking to, speaking of visiting with your elderly members of your family over the holiday, we're talking to elder law attorney Carrie Peck of the Peck Ritchie Law Firm. I'll give you the phone number to call and the website in just a second. Carrie, I wonder about that, too. I wonder what folks saw over the holiday and what sort of decisions folks were having about mom and dad's care.
Well, I think that those are important issues, John. And usually when the family gets together and you haven't seen somebody for a long time, you might notice some changes in their physical abilities. You might notice some changes in their cognitive abilities. And, you know, it's time to act. I mean, this is not a scenario where you want to wait because you don't want to offend somebody. When you notice changes, you should act. You should take steps to protect them. Some of those new steps include new laws that allow banks to freeze money when potentially someone is being taken advantage of. Florida on January 1st is going to have a new law that they've enacted that allows, it's called a hold and report. And when a bank customer opens their account, they're asked to put on a trusted contact, like I open it and I put my daughter's name on it. And if there's something suspicious, they call my daughter and ask about it. Mm. The ARP magazine reports this month that one individual lost $160,000 after receiving phone calls from purportedly the FBI telling him to mail money, to a secure location. And of course, by the time the family determined that the money was coming out of the account, the money was all gone. So there are a lot of recent innovations to try and help older adults. Older adults, we've talked about it a lot, and we do because there are so many scams going on, are subject to scams. You know, families, keep an eye on your older adults. Don't let them transfer money and send it off to strangers because they've been told that they've lost their identity or something of that nature.
Right,
these are just scams.
Well, so often now my phone pings with somebody and they say, I'll get a text and it'll say, oh, I'm sorry, I've lost the names in my contact. Who is this? And I got the USPS one a couple of times over the weekend. We were unable to deliver your package. Please click on this link. And it looks really legit. But there's just a lot of them going, hey, how was your holiday? Let me know. And it's a number, not a name. And I presume these are people that once I engage, they're going to find a way to get my money. Okay, so I can imagine how vulnerable my parents would be to something like that. And if there came a point then where they are about to transfer money, they're going to pay for something or give money to what they think is a kid or a grandkid, what's the stop? How can the adult children keep mom and dad from transferring money? You know, there should be like a two-stop mechanism where mom and dad can't do it until it goes through me. And I don't know that I'm talking about power of attorney, but maybe I am, Carrie. What's your thought about that?
Well, power of attorney would be a great device to have, John. Once again, for your listeners, a power of attorney is a document in which, while you're competent, you name someone to help you. And potentially when you're either not competent or, and you're using your example, being taken advantage of. So a power of attorney agent could contact the bank and say, hey, you know, my mom is being taken advantage of, and I'm her power of attorney agent under a power of attorney for property, and I'm directing you to not send that money. And that would be a great method of doing it. You know, part of the answer is it depends where you live. Not all states have the same laws on this.
Yeah.
And that's a bit of a problem.
When naming beneficiaries, a listener wants to know on a will, do you need to list Social Security numbers of the beneficiaries?
You do not. You do not. You should name specifically their name and their relationship to you. So John Doe, my son, who currently resides in Arizona.
I got a long list of questions from our listeners now. I will pass them on to Carrie. I'll let you manage these off the air, Carrie. We're out of time. But if folks want to reach you directly, Carrie, what's the best way to do that?
Please call us at 312 201-0900. We offer a free initial consultation, and we're happy to help all of John's listeners.
That's the Peck Ritchie Law Firm, peckritchie.com, and 312-201-0900. Happy New Year, my friend. I'll talk to you in 2025.
Happy New Year. Thank you, Bennett.